woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hello?
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. I already heard Matt, so Frank, he's already here someplace, so.
Yeah, I'm here.
You were not mic'd off, but that's okay. No, that's all right. I have issues with my machine here, as you can sort of tell. S&P futures up 26, NASDAQ futures up 83, Dow futures up 170. Frank, I didn't start out in this life, I don't think, being a conspiracy theorist, but I'm getting there. And I'm telling you, last night I minded my own business watching the football games. Of course, in preparation for the show, I flip on CNBC. And I see Spoo's open down 13 or something, or 12. And I go, well, that's interesting. And not all that, much to think. We had not the world's best weekend, I suppose, around the world. So we're, maybe down a little bit, no big deal. I go back like 10 minutes later and we're up 15. And I go, wait a minute. What did I just miss, right? And sure enough, it wasn't until like a half hour later that CNBC had the story that Trump had just signed the bill. And now, far be it from me to cast any aspersions. I would never do that. For a guy who's broke, supposedly, there probably have been presidents who, when the market wasn't that big of a deal during their time, I mean, it was always a deal if somebody was in it, but it wasn't national news on a second-by-second basis. There were presidents that probably really didn't care about the markets. I just absolutely am convinced that these people are making money on this stuff. And if we had any, we had the SEC with any kind of balls, they would find out, because I'm going to say that if that was me, that man knew he was going to sign that thing at 4 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just say, I'm doing it here, that way everybody in the world knows before the market opens that the thing has been signed. Somebody made that 25 points from the White House. I will bet my last dollar on it.
Now, do you think it was Mnuchin or Ross?
I think the kids, Kushner. But I don't know. I mean, I'm lobbing out names, but...
Somebody made the money.
But these people, they're way too smart to let something like that slip. I mean, there's a reason why you wait for the market to open before you announce this at 5 minutes after five. Why would you do that? I'm just asking. I mean, nobody's that naive, especially this group, because they're pretty smart about this kind of stuff. Just saying.
Oh, there's a difference between conspiracy and fact.
Yeah.
And as far as the SEC goes, based on my stint in the securities enforcement business, they want low-hanging fruit.
Well, yeah, they're not going to go after anybody like that. They'll find...
No, they want to go after a Frank or a Tom.
Yeah. Even though we don't get this information. But they're going to try and tell us we do.
And whatever we do is minimal
in
comparison.
I don't mean it's just this... We need to straighten... I don't know how you do this. We need to straighten this stuff out to where if you're big enough, you can be a crook, or if you're small, they come after you. I mean, I don't know how you change the boat, but, I'm not Mr. Revolution kind of thing.
But we see things like that all the time.
I know, but it's getting tiring.
Poor restaurants, the small restaurants cannot get out of the way or collect their Act of God insurance.
Right.
Or renegotiate their rent. But God forbid you're a huge law firm. You can stop paying and there's no blowback.
We don't have to worry about finding an attorney for a law firm.
No, they're the only people big enough to scare an insurance company or a major leasing firm.
Well, for those of you, Frank is going to hang on a few minutes into Mr. Flanagan's segment today because we're going to talk about some of these big firms, and why it's so quiet on the rent versus people not paying, can't pay mortgage front, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But so get a load of this, David. There I was. I guess I lucked out. You luck out by having something bad happen to you. So I drive all the way out to Audrey's Christmas Eve. And when I leave here, there isn't a car on the street, right? So I decide, all right, well, it can't be too, you know, there won't be too much traffic. Of course, traffic is, it's all over the place. There's a problem in Hubbard's Cave. There's a problem by First Avenue. It takes me, like, well over an hour to get to Orland, right? And, of course, her cousin wants to start early. Of course, we're late, but that's so what. He's always late, so it doesn't matter. So I pull into her driveway, and the little battery light goes on. So I made it all the way out there, and then the alternator died. So I guess I'm unlucky the alternator died, but I'm really lucky it waited until I got to her driveway till it conked. And I'd still be on it. Stevenson calling you two guys to come get me.
I was thinking we were both lucky, too.
Yes, you guys were both lucky, too. You come get me out of Stevenson. By the way, there's a million cars here. There's no tow trucks. So on Saturday, couldn't go Christmas, obviously, I go over to my guys over in Orlando, Checkpoint, and they're the best. Of course, I recommended the place to Frank. So would you ever expect David and Frank to leave a memory in a place?
No, not at all.
So I walk in and talking to the guy. Of course, they did it while I was waiting there. You know, they're really nice, as they always are. I
goes, hey, they're awesome.
The guy goes, don't call your girlfriend. The guy's coming right over. They'll be done in an hour. I said, okay, you just hang here. So I said, I was just talking to your friend Frank. Remember the guy with the Toyota with the brakes? All of a sudden, the guy bursts out laughing. Yeah, I remember him. He's hard to forget, isn't he? Oh, yeah, he is. So what does that mean, David?
It was a suspension.
Yeah. So then there's this guy sitting there. Of course, I start BSing with him, and there's this young lady. And we start talking, and I was telling him, you know, he says, well, where are you working? I said, I work downtown. I said, but boy, it's still a ghost town. He goes, yeah, you know, there once in a while. And he goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I manage money for people, and I do a podcast. So we used to be on the radio, and all of a sudden the girl, she's Hispanic, maybe 30-ish, real nice, and she goes, I know her. I remember your voice. I go, really? She goes, I used to listen to you guys every morning when you're on the radio. You got me started investing. I couldn't believe it. She goes, oh, yeah, a lot of people my age listen to you guys. She goes, are you still on the podcast? What is it, Stocks and Jacks? She plunks it on her machine. She goes, I'll listen to the podcast, and I'll tell my friends. And off she went with the oil change. I couldn't believe it. I got my alternator fixed. The lady said she liked the show, and the guy laughed at Frank. So talk about the triumvirate. The hat trick.
We laughed together.
Yes. You laughed.
Except my picture is on the wall. Yours isn't.
I'm not so sure which wall it's at. It might be on the wall of shame. I don't know, but... So Frank, how are we gonna? I was thinking about the vaccines, getting the stuff going, and you know my nephew's wife. She's my nephew's wife. She's a school teacher.
A niece.
Niece by marriage. She teaches math out in where the hell's the soccer stadium?
Bridgeview.
And, you know, they're kind of in, kind of out, mostly out from home. And so my brother and I were talking about, yeah, you know, some of the teachers are still afraid to go back, blah, blah, blah. You know, I was wondering, and supposedly, again, you hear these things, and you don't know if it's right or wrong, but they Illinois has had recently enough of a million vaccines that they could have given to people. And, of course, they've given out 100,000, right? So, as usual, Illinois is useless on just about anything. But I was wondering if maybe we should, I mean, the first thing you need to do, because, I mean, 40% of the people dying are still in nursing homes. I think you have to get to the nursing homes. But I almost wonder if you shouldn't at some schools. Now, this is kind of the way I would do it if you had the personnel. I would go school by school and say, all right, on a Tuesday, we're coming by and we're giving all the teachers antibody tests, which turn around in a day. All right, so on Thursday, mm-hmm. we're coming by, and we're giving anybody who doesn't have the antibodies, meaning people that haven't already had it, we're going to give everybody their first shot, and 10 days from now, we're giving them a second shot, and by the way, 11 days from now, the school's opening. And I don't know why we don't do something like that, because maybe in the sense of in 5-6 weeks, we can have 200-400 schools open, which to me is a tremendous... give back on your public transportation, getting kids out of the house, so that people are having to stay at home and watch him. And I think we need to do things like that and focus ourselves a little bit here. Where am I wrong?
Oh, you aren't wrong. Prisons also. I have a cousin that's the head nurse at a prison in Pennsylvania, and it's not considered a necessary employee, or, you know, whatever they call them, a frontline employee.
Right.
That's the last place I would want to be without a shot.
Well, I'm going to say that, unfortunately, half those people have already had it.
Unfortunately, but he has not.
Well,
he should get it before a math teacher.
Well, I mean, everybody can make a case, but I think whatever it is, you need to start.
We have to have a plan.
Yeah, you need to have some kind of. But I mean, the whole point is not to just. The goal is to get the school. Here's what I feel I'm missing, and maybe you guys can tell me I'm not missing it. It's not just old people, next group is whatever, people, you know, in this kind of industry, that kind of. We should be doing it as a way to get things open. So if you can give it to 25 teachers in a week and a half from now, the school opens without any problems, and all of a sudden you get people back and you relieve those families that are at stress, and you get kids learning again. You've got something happening. If you just do it randomly, you're not going to allay any of the fears. You have to make sure that certain spots are like safe so they're open, I think.
Well, you're going to have a bureaucracy that's going to have to be created.
Well, we got plenty of those.
Definitely going to whine about big government. Bureaucracy or program.
No, we can't do that. We got some of the people. We have to retarget some people who aren't doing anything now.
But you have to have a bureaucracy or a system to say who you're going to target, who decides who we're going to target, what's the delivery system, how do we go from school to school or place to place to do it. Somebody's going to have to manage this sideshow.
My issue with that is, and again, I go back, I shouldn't, but I go back to my movie reference. We have these people, Frank. We're paying so many swinging bleeps to do God knows what. We have so many people on the payroll now. Just retarget them for 2 months. What are they doing? They were chasing you and me for some license that we don't even know we have or something. I mean, what are they doing?
We had 9 months to put this together.
Well, that's my point.
On many different levels, and they didn't. I don't know what we do. We know what should be done, but who does it?
What's like?
And how do they do it? And who pays for it?
It's like your friend.
Where do the people come from?
Your friend Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that she jumps on the bureaucracy, but she clearly, in my mind, if she sat down here, she'd probably be a brilliant lady, and I'd be very, you know. But in my, from what I appear from her, she has no concept of the bureaucratic issue. I mean, when they put together this, what's the group that they made for? Consumer something something. What's that group? That they, it's in the last like 5 years. Was it Obama?
Consumer Protection Agency.
Yeah, yeah. So here you've got these guys. Now they hire 15,000 people. God's sake, Frank. Now you know if you have 15,000 people, you've got to have like at least a couple of buildings. You got to go buy those. Everybody's got to have a desk. Everybody's got to have a full, you know, cubicle of some sort. You got to have procedures. You got to have human resource people. You got to have all that stuff. Before you even look at any consumer protection, it's probably a 6 month to a year job. Just to hire people, pay them, figure out whose boss is who. And I don't have an issue with protecting consumers, except when you talk about banks are, depending on, I mean, I think this is still the way it is, and I think most of the listeners know this, I think the money center banks are still. It's supposed to be the Comptroller of the Currency watches them, right? The next level, the Federal Reserve Bank, the Federal Reserve is supposed to watch. And below that, it's the FDIC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now what about all those people? Like, that's their job. So now are we going to fire 15,000 people there? Or are we just have this duplication of effort where nobody watches anybody do anything, and yet we've got now 45,000 people doing this? I mean, it's some number. You have to say, let's just get, you know, we need a, there was a, I don't know, I shouldn't do this, but I'll give a Pullman reference. They used to have, you know, 40 people in the engineering department. It's before my time. So, you know, and they had probably 15 people that really were good engineers, 15, maybe 20. And the other 20 were, so we say, ancillary people, assistants, those kinds of things. And
well, you had draftsmen, which people forget about.
Yeah. But
vocational drafting, and, you know, talk about a useless skill now.
Well, yeah. But then they ended up with, when I was there, they had 200 people in there. You still had the 15 to 20 real engineers, but you had people that played with government. You had people that did quality assurance. And it wasn't just quality control. It was procedures to make sure that you checked on. They used to just say, here's a piece. It's supposed to be 10 inches by 11 inches, by the way, plus or minus 5,000 or plus or minus 10,000. Check every fifth one or something like that. And then your quality control guy would check every fifth one. And, I mean, obviously you'd look at the other ones to see if they were like 30 inches or something, but by and large, you check every fifth one or fourth one or whatever it was. And, so there was, but now, whoa, is that the right procedure? You need a procedure to make sure the guy checks every fifth one. He has to have a boss. He has to have somebody watching him. And all of a sudden, this morass of crap starts to invade the place. Back and forth, back and forth. We have procedure manuals instead of somebody just checking it. And all of a sudden, you've now got 200 people, but you still have the same 15 engineers that are actually doing something. But now you have 185 people who do nothing but take their time away from doing engineering stuff. It becomes a mess.
Well, the place where it's most apparent is administration and schools.
Oh, got you.
Universities. Yeah. When we went to Notre Dame, they ran that school from the first floor of the admin building. The finance department was like 12 ladies and Mr. Broderick. And that was it.
And what would you guess that the ratio was of, well, I'll start using cost accounting terms, direct to indirect, meaning professors to other people? I won't say hangers-on, because you have to have some administration people. What would you say the ratio was?
Direct, being professors,
yeah.
Probably 5-1, if not higher.
That's what I would think.
Because every department had a secretary. You know, you'd start there. And you'd have probably 5-1, 7-1.
Yeah, something like that. And, you know what it is now at the... I read this once, so I'd have to confirm it. But at the University of California school, the Berkeley and UCLA, and there's seven of them, right?
The university system.
Yeah, the university. So you know what the number is there?
1-1?
10-1. Indirect versus direct.
Oh, geez. I was thinking, so it's flip-flopped.
Yeah, it's only flip-flopped. Now, when I went to St. Chad Fisher, you know, my grammar school, they had a lot of busy people in the neighborhood, shall we say. So there were four classes in every grade. And every class was 40 people. David remembers how these places were.
What, with 50 kids in every class?
40 to 42, 45.
My first grade class had 59 kids in it.
We never had one that big. They were all 40, 40. So they weren't, I don't think we'd have fit. But but they had four classes. So you're talking 160 to 70 kids per grade, right? So you had four teachers per grade. You had two kindergarten teachers. So you're up to 34 people, right? The nuns would teach gym unless the priest came over and helped out. And he obviously didn't get paid. So you had a music teacher. You had two janitors, you had a principal, and she had an assistant. So you had five people that are indirect. And if a teacher called in sick, which was never, the principal came and taught class.
And you had slave laborers, teachers.
Yeah, the nuts were. Yeah, I don't think they did so hot in terms of money. So, but I mean, I'm not saying that that's correct. I mean, I don't think you would have a school that big now without a school nurse. I mean, there's things that make sense. You would have a full-time phys ed person. You wouldn't have a nun teaching people how to throw basketballs around. I mean, so you would want to up that a little bit to where maybe you had 10 or 12, but still you're talking 3-1 direct versus other. And I'm going to say just about all these schools now flip the other way. Certainly at the what do you think it is in Illinois? I'll bet it's 4-1. Indirect versus other.
Oh, hey, Chicago's even worse. Because you got to throw the patronage in.
Well, I'm going to say that, because I was in probably 15 schools, Frank. This is back, well, a long time ago. This is back when the janitors actually were employees of the Board of Education. No, they're not anymore. People have those contracts. We'd like to have those contracts, wouldn't you? But there'd be in a school that had wasn't as big as St. John Fisher, so I'm going to say two classes a grade. There'd be four janitors, and there'd be a janitress. You know, she took care of the girls' bathrooms and stuff, and
the manager.
Oh well, then you had the
engineer. Isn't that what they called the head guy?
Well, there's an engineer, yeah, and then he might have an assistant. But then you had, well, the engineer also. Well, way back in the day when you had the coal-fired stuff, the engineer essentially was responsible for the heating unit, and you had a fireman. And the fireman's job was to keep the boiler going and all the ancillary stuff that went with that. But the engineer managed all the pumps and did all the other stuff and basically was the head of the janitors.
Maintenance.
But he had a full day. When those things were going, that stuff was alive. I mean, it was a full-time job. I mean, you're talking high-pressure steam, running all the pumps and all that stuff. I mean, you didn't leave that room, Frank. You know, that's not a spot where you went out to lunch because that stuff, I mean, it was like a ship, for God's sake. We're talking 80 pounds of pressure.
So the problem's the indirect. That's where we can control it.
Yeah.
And I've changed my idea about the doing the vaccinations. That's probably a good private sector job, and you start with CVS.
Well, Walgreens is the one that I think I think they're the ones going out to nursing homes, aren't they, Walgreens?
Yeah, and CVS. And I'm sure there's other people that can do it, too. Think of all the nurses that are in healthcare that aren't working right now because they're doing elective surgeries or closed down.
Well, yeah.
We got those people we can put to work.
Well, I'm saying
we make more than $300 a week.
We got all kinds of people that are getting paid. I won't say doing nothing, getting paid that we could tap into for these kinds of things. Wouldn't you say?
This is a private sector. I'm saying this. It's something that should be done by delivered by the private sector and controlled by the public sector.
Well, what, I mean, you would think
policy versus action.
Well, you would think that the nursing home would be able to call Walgreens on their own and schedule it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it should be push and pull.
Yeah.
On the delivery, because there's some smaller nursing homes that people might, you know, your local Walgreens would not know about.
But even the nursing homes, the idea there would be that if, in my world, I think those people, I mean, whatever. Who knows? It may be me one of these days. Probably will be. But the thought of not being able to go visit the person in the room next to me, I can't even imagine. If you gave me a knife, I know where it would go. You know, I mean, please don't leave me a gun.
Can you imagine us not being able to talk to people?
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. And but I mean, this has to be done with a purpose. If we go to, you know, David's funeral or a funeral home, God, talking about a Freudian slip, David's nursing home. And there's 50 people in there. I want to go there, and I mean I wouldn't have to worry about the antibody tests there because nobody's probably, if they had it, they're not there anymore. So I'm going to give the vaccination, and I'm going to come back in 10 days or wherever you get the second dose. Then I'm going to make sure that David opens the damn place up, because the family should be able to show up at that point, right? I mean, the
one
person
would
should,
hope so.
I mean, it's the, you don't go back to this lockdown because I mean I have this since my stepfather, David, knew very well, nursing homes, Dan and I, my brother would go, he was in a bunch of different ones, so finally we got him in the veterans home, which was terrific. If you don't show
which
up...
Which ended up being the worst as far as COVID.
No, just one of the four. The one in Manteno, I don't think I ran an issue.
Oh, Quincy was a problem also.
Oh, yeah, I mean, probably. But what I'm saying is if you don't show up, I mean, you need, everybody has to have an advocate. The idea of, when you're going there, you're not only just visiting your person, you're checking on the care. I mean, don't kid it. Don't anybody kid themselves. If your mom's or your dad's in a nursing home, when you're there, the first thing you do is looking for bruises, you're looking to see if he smells, you're looking to see if the bed's changed. I mean, you're there as a, not just a friend or a family member.
An advocate.
Or an inspector, too, to be perfectly blunt. And the idea that you can shut all those people out, just give me your $7,000 check. You know what? Bull bleep on that. I'll just say it. Just, you know, I would put up with that for a second, Frank. I mean, Anyway, so what about
the license to steal, and you'll get engaged in fraud. You'll get pardoned by the president.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's
we have this guy, that guy who the biggest nursing home owner in Illinois.
Well, he also pardoned the two guys from the Congress that were guilty of insider trading. Hence
and the guy that stole $500,000 from his campaign fund, and his wife turned on him, and he pardoned both of them.
See, now, I wouldn't. You wouldn't want to be pardoned in that group, Frank. It's a rogue's gallery.
I might go drink with them, but I wouldn't pardon them.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why things like that make me suspicious of the trade last night. Anyway, speaking of which, S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 93. This is right after the president signed the deal that he said he wasn't going to sign. Of course, they waited till the market opened first, so the market opened down and turned in a flash. We'll be right back, Mr. John Flynn. He's hanging with Frank for a few minutes because we're going to talk about what's going down with all these people downtown that aren't, nobody's here. What about the rent? What about the mortgages? We're going to talk about that. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Dave Scatina, and aboard. Mr. Matt Weber decided to take one extra day with family out in Iowa without any snow or anything. Actually, pretty good weather for the holidays, at least so far, but David will tell us in a minute if that's going to... S&P futures up 24.50, NASDAQ futures up 93. As the president, unlike what he threatened, signed the bill yesterday. It's somewhat of a time where he got the market opening the wrong way, and then it flipped around almost instantly, and it's making me very suspicious, let's just say. Dow futures up 157 over in Europe. DAX up 200, 1.5%. This guy's all flipped too. FTSE up 6 points, call that flat. CAC around up 62, that's 1.1% over in Asia. Nikkei up 197.7%, Shanghai up 72 cents. Let's call that one flat. Hang Seng down 71, that's 0.3%. Just as a way of review, on Friday we're up 70 in the Dow, up 13 in the S&P, NASDAQ up 33, make that Thursday. Bonds, 95.95 as we're relentlessly trying to make it to 1 point here on the 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.55, so that's actually more, less negative, more positive, whatever you want to call that. Japan, positive 0.008, so it can't get out of its own way at all over there. Oil, up 42 cents, 48.65. Brent up 41 cents, 51.70. Natural gas down 24 cents, 227, which must mean that we're, that's a big move in natural gas. That's almost 10%. I think we must be talking about a mild winter or something, or at least the latest predictions. Arbub up a penny to 139. Gold down 220, was up earlier, was up last night initially, and as it dropped back down here. But silver, look at this, up 57 cents. It's 2.2%. That's a lot. Copper up 2 cents, 358. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It's 6:35 in Chicago. Traffic for the Monday morning has been mostly incident-free, but we have a couple of accidents to report that have cleared up. One on U.S. 41 at Martin Luther King Drive, and we have another one at 99th Street on I-57 in Halstead. Chicago weather today, a little better, 30, partly cloudy. Today's high is going to be 33, and the sun, we should see the sunshine this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 55 and clear to a high of 63, partly cloudy. In sports, the NFL, the Bears blow out the Jags, 41-17 to stay alive for the playoffs hope. Cardinals drop under the 49ers, 20-12. In the NBA, the Bulls lose to the Warriors in a buzzer beater, 129-128, and the Suns beat the Kings, 116-100. In the NCAA hoops, DePaul loses 90-95 to Providence. Northwestern beats Ohio State, 71-70. Illinois, 69, beats Indiana, 69-60. Back to you, Tom.
The Bulls, their defense is the Ole. That's their style. I mean, there's no defense at all. I watched a little bit of it last night. It's Playground Central. But even, you know, we used to play a little defense on the playground because I couldn't score very well. I had to play some defense. Anyway, do we have Mr. Flanagan? Do we have John?
John, are you there?
John, you got us? We still have Frank, right?
I don't know where Frank went, Tom.
He was supposed to be hanging in. Do we have John? Let's see if we can get some of these guys.
All right, let me get right back to him.
Yeah, why don't you get back? We still have a little bit of our phone issues. Our guys got to call in on different numbers.
Right, yeah.
And our guys are kind of stuck in the mud a little bit. You know, they're not the most flexible older dudes, you know, one might say. But, again, I know I'm jumping on this opening last night in the market a little bit more maybe than I should, but these things just shouldn't happen. I mean, people should be mindful of a little bit of, you know, when markets are open and when they're not, because markets are thin enough now anyway. I mean, the last thing you need is for your president to decide he's going to sign something at 5 minutes after five on a Sunday night. Because you just wonder if, I mean, I don't wonder. I know somebody's making money on this stuff. I can feel it. But and I sit here all day and that's my job is watching the market for people and managing their money. And the constant, do we have John?
Not yet. Right. Hang in there.
All right. We'll get him eventually. We, plenty of stuff to talk about. But, the weather this weekend all I do is remember Christmas of 1983 when it was 25 below. Anything better than that I'm happy with, but really haven't anybody, massive snowstorms or anything. A lot of people were traveling at OS. On Christmas Eve, over 1 million people flew, which is the first time in, 10 months that's happened. So I think there's, the economy kind of wants to be coming back here a little bit. You know, how much damage has been done, you know, I don't know, but I'll mention last night, since the Bulls were useless to watch and the Packers looked like they were on their way, I dug into some of Milton Friedman's encyclopedia book, The Monetary History of the United States, which you can only do about four pages like in one time before you fall asleep. But I was going through the part about the history of World War II, and most of the inflation and the money supply increase was in the 10-12% range, even during the war. And we're 25 this year. just to give everybody a point of view of how far out on their skis the Fed is. You know, which is really, yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, I just, I think they, I mean, I think they think they have a plan. I'm not sure they do, but, you know, we will see on that, because I don't know what, I don't know what the backdrop is, but you know, I did find one thing interesting, probably for the listeners as well, is that the, they had last, there actually was more inflation, before the war started. Because when we were start selling war materials to France and Britain, they were getting paid with gold shipments. When gold was a big part of the, you know, the money back then, not so much anymore, but just in terms of there's way more money than there is gold. But the money supply was going up pretty dramatically before the war, and as soon as the Lend-Lease started, they essentially were getting equipment then and weren't paying for it. So once the actual start of the quote money war was not the bombing of Pearl Harbor, it was really May of 1940, which is when we started doing stuff on Lend-Lease, essentially not getting paid not getting paid immediately. I don't know if we ever did a lot of the stuff that we were sending over to Britain and. And I'm not sure we were sent in Russia at that time, but we certainly were to Britain. We stopped getting paid for it, so at least immediately. So it's pretty interesting that that's the history of that. And you know, I mean, you go back and you read this stuff, you'll see. But another thing that was interesting, talk about the Fed's balance sheet being huge now. Okay, Frank, you're back.
I'm back.
I was. Where did you go?
The dark side.
Well, you know, I have a feeling that you flip back and forth pretty easily. I was regaling people, but hopefully not putting them to sleep, regarding, I was doing some research on money supply and Fed maneuvers during World War II and before and after. And it's pretty fascinating in the sense that the money supply was only growing at 12% a year, and this year we grew it at 25.5%. So they had inflation during the war, but I was saying that a lot of it started, Frank, before the war when we started doing, you know, building military supplies for Britain and France, and they were actually paying us. And as soon as Lend-Lease started and they stopped paying us, then all of a sudden the money supply like flattened out. It was pretty interesting. It wouldn't be at all of what you thought thinking back. But I also was saying that when this gold started to come in 1939, early 1940, from Britain, the Fed, unlike now, where they've got this monstrous balance sheet, they had no balance sheet, so they couldn't combat it. So they had nothing on their balance sheet that they could go out and sell and drag the money in. So when you see it now, they can always expand, right? They can always just start buying stuff and basically making up money for it. But they can't always go the other way. Well, they can now because they got almost $8 trillion they can mess with. But back then, they didn't have a balance sheet where, if all of a sudden the gold started flying over, that they could balance it out. We have Mr. Flanagan trying to get through here. Let me get him a number real quick, and we'll do this real quick. But the obviously our communication with our guys, does that just mean we're old, Dave, or what does that mean? Just saying, you know.
And maybe it was the bomb at AT&T in Nashville.
Yeah, what about that? The guy blew himself up. Well, how good was he?
I think he wanted to go.
So they found his DNA basically in his Winnebago.
I splattered around the neighborhood, I would think.
Does he have any idea? What do you think the guy was trying to do? Was AT&T? Was he a former AT&T employee or something?
I know, he probably had the same experience dealing with AT&T customer service that I have.
they could never find a person?
So, or they kept on repeating the same thing. I understand how you feel.
No. Or if you say, if they absolutely can't help you with anything, they always say, is there anything else I can help you with?
Yes, it was a pleasure to help you today. You know, you want to get me going again?
Yeah, it's a pleasure to help you, but is there anything else I can help you with? You didn't help me the first time. Oh, yeah, well, anyway. But they don't have any. Get a load of this. We have a quick story, but for those that don't know, we have we go out through a server to a group that puts the show up for us, right? But the last thing you want to have happen in a securities firm is to have anybody to be able to back up into the securities firm through our internal system. So mm-hmm. I have a dedicated line that I've had for 10 years now. It goes just to that computer. So nobody can make it into the stocks and, or from stocks and jacks into PTI securities. And I'm very happy with it. You know, whatever. It costs me $70 a month for one line, AT&T figure. Well, now they got a hair right up there behind it. There's no more copper. They don't want any more copper. Right. So they call me and they say, we're sending a guy out and we're going to give you a fiber optic line. I said, I just want the one line fixed. I don't want anything else or any rest of the place. Oh, we understand, sir. We understand. So they send these guys out. Three guys come out. They spend an entire day here. Go all the way down to the basement, all kinds of stuff. And they go, they say, well, hey, David, how about calling John? Because he's calling in and he says there's no answer. So something's messed up. So why don't you give him a buzz and guide him?
Yeah, I called all three lines and was having problems. So it's not Dave. It's the system.
All right. Well, he'll figure it out. But so the guys come and they spend an entire day here and put in this huge router and they go, we can do all your stuff now. We've got this massive Wi-Fi in here. I said, oh, Wi-Fi? I said, it's a securities firm, you idiots. Why would a security firm ever want a Wi-Fi where somebody like on another floor could get into our system? Oh, yeah, you probably wouldn't. So I end up having to take this big router and bring it to a UPS and send it back to them. And I said, what about my line to the computer? The guy says, oh, we didn't touch that. I said, what are you doing here? They put some massive new system in. And we just...
We can't use.
So we take it out. Well, now all of a sudden, they're all over me regarding, we need to, by the 31st, we're going to get rid of all copper. It's worked forever. Now, why? I have no idea. We got to put a fiber optic line in. So last week, we're going to send two guys out. They might be there 8 hours. 8 hours? To run a fiber optic line? And they go, yeah. Of course, they don't show up. So now they're in a panic. We've got to fix this by, like, Thursday. Because the copper won't work next week. Who's turning it off? Well, we are. Well, then don't turn it off. I mean, Frankie, you got to... Yeah, we give these people a monopoly. We used to have a... When you went from place to place, you had this big, huge box called a Telos box. And what it would do is it would take the stuff that came from your board, it's analog, and they turn it into digital, and it'd pump over the line to digital. To whoever you're going, whatever station. So we could go to any station in the country we wanted. And, I mean, it was pretty much idiot-proof, and the quality is spectacular, just like you're in a studio. So all of a sudden, they decide they don't want to do this anymore. Now, instead of selling it to somebody, like they did in Denver, they go to the state, and through the FCC or whatever, whoever runs this stuff for the state, they decide they're going to start raising the prices to force people to do something else.
It must be the Citizens Utility Board.
Yeah, so all of a sudden we get to the point where they're charging me $600 to go from the box on the ninth floor to essentially the alley. Because AT&T has the inroads into the building. And in the alley we connect with Sprint or somebody. So all the lines we use to go to Phoenix and other places were $200 a month. And the fee to go to the alley was 6.25. All right, Frank, we're going to have to say goodbye to you because we only have one line working. So we'll have to...
Okay, well, yeah. Say hello to John.
Yeah,
okay.
Frank, we're just having systems problems. I heard about it all weekend.
All right, take care, buddy. Now, we got to get John when he calls in, and SP Futures are up 26.
Yeah.
You wonder why we give these... But then they actually got that rate through the state legislature. It's $600. It used to be $50 because they don't want anybody doing that anymore. So now we got this beautiful machine here that you know, that now we can't ever use. And the other stuff, the blue boxes and other ways to get on through the internet, you can, we can get the stations using that, and that's what people use now, but the quality is not as good. Not at all. I'm close to as good as the other stuff. The other stuff was a digital copper line. And, you know, whatever. But all this stuff is going on behind the scenes that really nobody has the time, especially with the COVID, has the time or wherewithal to fight it all. And yet, these guys are just, they keep working your legislators, and they keep pushing. Just keep pushing. They never stop. And it's, you know, the more you know, the more frustrated you get. That doesn't mean you blow yourself up in your Winnebago, but I have not heard, read at all what kind of explosive the guy used or anything like that. Not that I'm any kind of an explosive expert on that. But I mean, it looked like he, was quite a bum, and, interesting stuff. Anyway, individual stocks in the Dow, Amgen up 469. We've got Boeing up 2, Apple up $1.61. Virtually everything, Goldman Sachs, which has been absolutely on a tear. Goldman Sachs, look at the graph here. Goldman Sachs, I mean, and after all, that is the Federal Reserve's job, is to make sure all the people in the room. Goldman Sachs was 190 on the 30th, on November 2nd, and now it's 259. So what is that? That's $60, which is 30% in what? In 60 days. That's not bad. Just saying. But, you know, the money being poured in, of course, talked to people all weekend regarding what they should do with their funds, and it's interesting. I mean, one of the couple of ladies that came over to Audrey's were been putting stuff in their IRA their whole life, and I think they've done pretty well. And I think they're nearing retirement, but nobody. Well, I think the market's too high. What should I do? If you think the market's too high, go online and tell them instead of being 100% in stocks, you want to be 50%. Well, I can't do that. Well, why not? Well, because I need a way to protect it. Well, you can't in an IRA. You can't buy any puts. You can't do any of that stuff. So you're either in or you're out. Or, I mean, obviously, with various degrees of, you can be any percentage in or out you want to be. Yeah, but I'm not making any money on the interest. I know that. But we started the conversation by you saying that you've had a huge run and you're nervous at this level. If you are, then, you know, get out for a while. You can always get back in. And I'm not giving you investment advice. I'm just, you're telling me that you think it's too high and you need this money and you don't want to give it up. But your situation is you can't use puts, you can't sell calls, you can't do any sort of mitigation device through the market because you're in a 401k and the only thing you have is a mutual fund. Which is, you know, isn't bad. It's just there, you can't really hedge it. Well, yeah. Well, I just think I'll like let it go. Wow. Well, till when? I mean, if you have the feeling that it's time to take a breather for you or the market, take the breather. What the hell? I mean, if it turns out that the market runs 5% ahead of you 2 years from now, but all of a sudden there is no COVID, there is no this, and everybody's doing great, what's the difference? I'd be happy to pay up 5% 2 years from now if all the bumps in the road were gone. You know, I mean, but obviously that's not. You know, I mean, why are we so afraid to do that? Well, I just think I'll let it hang for a while. I can't. The thought of it going up today like it is and them not being involved, it's just locked in. Oh, no, I deserve the 1% today. And the president, you know, signed the bill. It's up. I deserve that. I can't be in cash. I mean, if you think things are too high, if you think that, not me, it's you, then you sort of need to do something, I think. Okay, we finally got him. John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing fine, except our phone company is at work. I'm just loving it.
AT&T, you know.
You know, it now takes 6 weeks to move an 800 number from one system to the next.
Are you kidding?
Somehow, you know, there's like a, you know, we, I don't, it's nuts. We had people here, for those that, full disclosure, for the securities firm, we just went out and got a spectacular new system. It's like two or three times, because we have all kinds of quote systems and stuff in the building and or in the office. And when you have quote systems, I mean, your bandwidth you need is pretty dramatic, because the amount of stocks, the amount of option quotes, obviously, that we use are pretty high up. So we want to make sure. We used to have the equivalent of, I think, three T1s or something. Now I don't know what T's we're up into, John, but it's whatever it is. It's like three times as fast as we used to have. And I notice my quotes I get from IB are a lot quicker. So it's good for us. Good for. But you would think that this changeover would be somewhat painless, and we had like really good people here. So we ended up the AT&T guys. Now this is how screwed up things are. The AT&T guys, because we went to AT&T because they finally put fiber optics in the building, and long story. And they wouldn't come out because of the COVID. Right, so we end up having our phone expert guy, which we've had for 20 years, here with, because he was the phone system guy, with an outside systems guy, consultant, working inside, and the two of them are on the phone to AT&T in, like, India. I mean, could you write fiction like this? I mean,
no, nothing that anybody would believe.
Yeah. Anyway. Now, in the meantime, for my one little line here, that all I ask is for them to leave it the way it is, because it's never gone out on us, never done anything that we take the show out of. But AT&T, it's the biggest problem in their whole system that I want to stay on copper and they want me on fiber optic. And they're going to send two guys here to fix it. They're going to be here 8 hours for one line. One line. And I said, well, your other guys wouldn't come in the door because of COVID. All right, these guys don't care. One part of the place, they're trying to sell us a system, which they essentially did because it's so much better. Those guys refused to come in the place. Now, these guys, I don't even want, and they're busting down the door. You know, we wonder why we're... This couldn't have gone on during the war. We couldn't have done that in 3 years, but we did.
Well, it couldn't go on in any kind of growth period for businesses either. Could you imagine trying to do any kind of business with systems like this?
Well, we're trying to.
We're trying to.
Sorry, we were going to talk with Frank before we got kind of buzzed up on these numbers. What is going on? He has a... somebody he talks to, that can't come on because I think he's, I don't know who he works for, I have no idea, but, said that the stuff that's going on downtown, I mean, for people that aren't in downtown Chicago, I almost can't even describe what it looks like. I mean, there's nobody here. I mean, there hasn't been since March. And, there was the one big episode in June or July where Jenner and Black said they're not paying their rent. Now those guys have a 15-year lease that's essentially up in 2021, right, John? I think. So this is some kind of a salvo for, for negotiation, I'm sure. But when you look at it, you say, these guys are going to try and essentially screw their landlord because they're not coming down here and they don't want to pay for everything. But some of these leases, and John, you can opine on this more than me, have all kinds of clauses in there where what if the building's partially open? What if this? What if that? And there's, there's rebates. And if you start saying, because literally, I mean, if you had like, the old World Trade Center, I haven't been in the new one. I mean, there's no way you could get the thousands of people that worked in that place upstairs if you had only have three or four people in an elevator.
Oh, no.
Now, whether to hold three or four people makes sense, we'll debate that another day because I think it doesn't, but that's not me. It's Center of Disease Control and who knows what motivates them. But you could make the case that, hey, I can't come into the place. Why, if I can only have a third of my people here, I don't want to pay a third of my rent. I mean, whether you get there or not, I don't know, but, I mean, there are grounds in the leases for that, is what you've told me anyway, but Frank says right now, he goes, it's the biggest, it's almost like the phony war in World War II. He goes, the buildings aren't talking about it, that they're not getting rent from people, because they don't want to make a big deal out of it, because they don't want their lenders to essentially know how bad it is. Then the lenders aren't telling anybody they're not getting their mortgage checks either. Because it's nobody's talking to anybody, nothing is essentially becoming public, yet it's just kind of stern. I mean, is that what you think's happening?
I've suspected it's just as Frank described it for some time, that nobody wants to let it out of the bag just how dire things have become, because it will start, dominoes throughout the real estate market that are going to kill everything off. So I think there's a kind of advantage here in saying as little about it and not creating panic over it and coming up with cash for your lender or working out something behind the scenes, because the lenders know just how dire things are too, and they don't want to have the spotlight on them either. So the problem though is that really creates a kind of explosion explosive effect, because this bubble's just getting bigger and bigger, and it's going to have to explode at some point. And when it does, it's going to take out, you know, lenders, landlords, tenants, everybody.
Well, John, when we come back from break, we'll talk about, I was actually ran into a buddy of mine last week that works for one of the places down here, we'll go nameless, that owns a bunch of the buildings in this immediate area. But these guys have owned them for, you know, 70 years. So I don't think they're paying any mortgage. So those guys are in pretty good shape to, you know, if you can't pay your rent for 2 months and you've been there for 20 years, well, don't pay your rent for too much. You know, next time everybody's fat and happy, we'll raise it a little bit and we'll get some of it back, which everybody would be all right with, I guess.
Sure.
But if you just bought the place, I mean, I don't know what, 425, which used to be 440. David, you probably still call it 440, but it's now 425. Those guys, I'm going to say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they bought the place, and I'm thinking there's a big fat mortgage on that place. So I don't know what those guys do. Do they just keep paying or try to out of net earnings, or out of retained earnings, or you know, I don't know what. But I think every single building probably has a story to it, right?
Of course, and you know, the ones that had so-called anchor tenants in them that were expecting to attract, you know, new tenants based on a lease they'd already signed with some bigger tenant, that's all kind of gone out the window too. So there's no expectation that there's going to be people following any of these big occupiers of space, because there aren't such people anymore, and there's going to be fewer of them in the future, I think.
Well, now that they've opened up the ramp here to the Eisenhower, Ida B. Wells, Maddie and I don't go by the post office in the last week, but for years now, they've had every morning you'd see 100, 200 workers lining up to go in that place. Now, we don't see, not really seeing anybody, Jim. I mean, I don't see how that place attracts the, what, couple hundred thousand people or whatever, 100,000 people they expected to move in. I mean, Uber's not moving in. They were their anchor tenant. I mean, what's going to happen there with all that money?
Right.
We'll talk about that after break. SP Futures up 26, NASDAQ Futures up 98. Those that wonder what happened, the president signed the bill that he wasn't going to sign yesterday, seemingly right after the market opened. So we had a spin of up, down 13 and a spooze, up 13 in about 5 minutes at like quarter after five last night. Interesting stuff. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies. Mr. Dave Scutina having an interesting morning on the board. Hey, so get a load of this, John. It appears that some of the stuff, the problems we're having, are because of the blow up in Memphis or Nashville, where the hell it was.
I would bet that. Yep.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Did you, I guess I'm curious in today's reporting world. I mean, when does the bleep hit the fan here? First of all, I guess, walk me through who owns these loans. I mean, it's not like, 40 years ago where Continental Bank would have the mortgage on like the Board of Trade building. I don't think there's anybody that does that anymore.
No, there'd be a lead pension fund or a consortium of banks, you know, with positions laid out ahead of time so that the risk is apportioned. And it's you know, lending by committee or an international committees. I mean, it's an entangled mess. I mean, I haven't kept up with it so much in the last 15 years or so, but I bet it's even more Byzantine now than it was then. And it was looking pretty Byzantine years ago.
Well, if I were going to say, God, this Board of Trade looks like it's cheap or something, which I wouldn't because there's nobody in there, and I wanted to buy it, who would be my first? How would I even find these funds in these places, that insurance companies, and how would I even go about finding these people? It's not like walking into a Continental Bank and saying I need a mortgage. How do you go about finding the people that are interested in getting the best rate? I mean, who would even negotiate with? I'd be totally lost.
Yeah, there were such things, you know, as like, you know, third parties that would be, you know, researching, looking for, you know, customers at both sides of the table, whether it was a lender or a borrower, and putting together, you know, a better deal. And it's sort of like what mortgage brokers would do on a residential basis. And I think that sort of intermediary has really exploded, and you've got people who specialize in just that, as you do in, you know, leasing agents and everything else. Now that's become a much more complicated and indirect process where you're dealing with different levels of people, because there are so many people you have to talk to get any kind of information. So you deal with, you know, it's like having an agent if you're a Hollywood star or something. You never talk to the person, but you talk to these people in between. And that, of course, I think slows things down at a certain level, but it's the only way you can really do business anymore, because it is too complicated.
How about people on Stocks and Jacks? Do we need an agent?
I think we need a liaison with AT&T.
we certainly,
full time.
We certainly do. I can't imagine these guys are going to show up this week to fix my line, but anyway.
They'll be down in Nashville, I'm sure.
Well, Janet, is it so there's no such thing as I'm buying a Board of Trade building for $125 million, I'm putting 20 down. Now, the other 105, if there's five people involved, do they all take essentially $20 million, $21 million of the first mortgage, or does somebody take the first, the other people take the seconds? I mean, are they all different?
It could be all different. It could be a mixture. It could be, you know, a first or a second. You know, it could be a more traditional-looking hierarchy. But you've got so much money that it takes to put these deals together now that you can't have, I mean, and the same thing with the insurance too. You've got layers of insurance liability for everything from title insurance to liability insurance, and it's, you know, spectacularly expensive. And you've got people around the front, you know, line of defense, the primary liability, secondary, tertiary, and all this is contingent, so they can charge less for that because, you know, they've got a smaller risk. But it's all very delicately tuned in the event that there is a default at any level here. And the trouble I see is that there really hasn't been a huge default on a single building or in a market for some time now, such that everybody else would be looking nervously about what this means for us too. But I think there's many things that could go down in the next 6 months where everything just grinds to a halt. And In lieu of a collapse, you might just have a freeze up of some kind where nothing is happening, and everybody is waiting to see what happens next. And you've got no lending being done, no leasing being done, or anything else, which is no good either.
Well, that's what I'm most concerned about, Jan. I mean, certainly as somebody who's responsible for people's, you know, money in a lot of ways. I so far with the Fed doing their shtick, and we've managed to, you know, there's areas that have plummeted, but We have some new stock. We got money pouring in. So people are pretty much giddy in the market, especially in some of these companies that, you know, first of all, if we cure the COVID thing, I'm not so sure that Zoom is, the household word 2 years from now, but, they might still be, who knows, but, that's stuff I don't know much about, but I wonder if as we sit here, drinking at New Year's Eve, that somehow or another there's a little water under the building and we're losing a little bit of dirt underneath our foundation, like by the minute. And one of these days when we think the world is right again, the place falls apart. I mean, I'm sort of getting that feeling here, and I don't know how to price it. And it's kind of bugging me. Everything looks happy above ground, but below ground, I think we got problems in some of these areas. I don't see how you could take out, 50 buildings in Chicago and not have it impact your financial system.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just Chicago, of course. It's every financial center. It's every metropolis worldwide. There's nothing particularly unique, I think, about Chicago or New York or L.A. right now. It's the same everywhere you go. I think every market is pretty much in the same boat. There's some, of course, that are more precarious than others, but there's none that are really secure where the outlook is good. So this I don't think, I can't really think of any kind of parallel for this in history.
No, I can't either.
It's just everything has become so glutted, and the prices of everything have continued to soar, but the whole thing worldwide is on the brink of some kind of reset. So I don't think we know exactly where we're headed in this, but we will all be in it together, it looks like.
Well, that's the part. I mean, James, you get accused by people, or the more you study, the more people think, hey, there's a smart guy. God, he's on a podcast, right? But if you're the guy, all you do is realize how much you don't know. Because everything you read gets you to a spot where, people trying all kinds of lines to get in here. Everything you read gets you to the spot where, you wonder what's going down. I mean, I don't know the relationship between... I would use the term the Board of Trade building, and I have no idea. These guys could be totally flush. I don't know the relationship between them and, the insurance company. Because I have a feeling the insurance company is probably pretty flush, especially if I don't think too many, they claim that people aren't wrecking their cars as much and those kinds of things. So those guys are probably okay. But I don't know that if we're a smaller bank, did they go down the chain and have three or four other smaller banks involved in this mortgage? And there are people. Is there a guy in, Cut Bank, Montana, that has a piece of a downtown building in Chicago that nobody has a clue? Now, is that going to impact him or not? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I didn't, and I don't think anybody knows.
I'm with you, Tom. It's really difficult to kind of isolate one part of this thing and say this is how this will play out, because everything is completely enmeshed with everything else now too.
Yeah, I don't. We're not going to solve this here, but the little fingers that hang out there. I mean, nobody would have guessed. What puts me down this road is when we had this issue in 2007, 2008, and you had all these mortgages, and you had these mortgage backs. So there were $35 worth of debt that were piled on every individual mortgage. Because that's how many times the things were bought and sold again in portfolios, which is incredible, really. And so there still are people today that I guess they don't want to look, past their nose. It's a bad thing to say because some of the listeners probably feel this way. Still are convinced that the entire 2007-2008 fiasco was a bunch of people, mostly minorities, that got property they shouldn't have got. And it's Bill Clinton's fault for wanting people in a house. Well, that might have been, some part of, if you believe that, you actually believe World War One was caused by Archduke Ferdinand getting shot when nobody gave a crap who Archduke Ferdinand even was, right?
Right.
It just happened to be the flashpoint, but it would have happened anyway, I think.
If it weren't the Archduke, it would have been some other Archduke.
Yeah, it would have been another Archduchess or somebody.
Right.
So, I mean, I, yes, did people get mortgages that probably they shouldn't have, and was there a federal push for that? Yeah, but in a normal world, that would have been 10% of the mortgages, and they, you know, and half of those would have gone under, and so what, Janet? We can absorb that easy. But we can't absorb the 35 hours worth of crap. But, I mean, I was going through even years later, I'm going through the list of these banks. There's a couple of banks that went under in Germany, and Dr. J and I went over and did some lecturing over there, and I thought I knew who most of the big banks, at least their names, were in Germany. John, there's five names. I never knew who the hell these people were. And it's millions of dollars. I mean, how the hell did they get involved in some mortgage thing at Goldman Sachs, for God's sake? Or Bear Stearns. And yet they did. So it's almost, to me, it's impossible to even have a clue as to what the ramifications are of you know, London losing 25% of their commercial mortgages or something. I mean, that money could be anywhere. Could be China. Could be God knows where, right?
Right. You know, the experience I've had in watching something unfold where there's been, say, a collapse of a landlord, you know, or somebody just can't hang on to the properties for whatever reason. It was when the Continental Bank here in Chicago collapsed in 1984. You know, Penn Square, you know, all the oil leases. I mean, this is, Continental's Armageddon. When they went under, they owned, as I recall, six or seven prime downtown office buildings. They just owned them. I mean, they owned their own bank or a piece of it anyway. But they had other buildings that they had taken on as investments that they owned outright, and they had to liquidate all of that stuff within about 6 to 8 months because they were flat on their back.
So these are buildings that in bad times got kicked to them because people couldn't, and they just hung on to them.
Right, right. And yet even then, the Chicago commercial real estate market was such that this didn't cause a, you know, collapse in, you know, rents or anything else, even though this was a big, buildings that were being dumped pretty much on the market, and they were fully leased, probably most of them, so the tenants didn't much care what happened. They just had a new landlord when all the dust settled. But this didn't create any kind of shockwave that I recall with other owners of buildings when they saw all this stuff, like fire sale stuff going on the market at once. They weren't fire sale kinds of deals. So the market absorbed it. Things kind of went along without much of a glitch at all. I just don't see that it can ever be that limited in the event of some big lockup like what we're facing now, because there isn't a single building downtown that will be unaffected.
Well, is there a chance that people would just not panic and well, right now that's what they're trying to do.
Right.
Is cooler heads are trying to prevail and say, because Frank lobbed me some numbers I think he got from the city. Not through somebody's back office, but I think online somewhere, the amount of office space for rent in downtown and the surrounding areas, the industrial space for lease is like a billion square feet or something. I mean, the numbers are off the chart. And if you decided I need to sell, 175 West Jackson like within the next 3 weeks, God, Jan, we could put $50 bids in and we might get one. You know.
Yep.
I mean, we might find out the place is so much at hack, and I don't know this, that we don't want it for $50. But I mean, I guess, you know, even if, and I out of all the stuff that people have heard me say negative in the last however many months, I am very bullish on this vaccine. Because the more I research how the thing was derived and, the fact that they're not giving people, the full virus, I think it makes it safe. It doesn't mean you're not going to get a sore arm, but I think it makes it safe, and I think it's something we can move forward with. The stuff that they're talking about, the new mutations, I think have been here for 6 weeks at least, you know, and we're just not getting the right number. But I really do wish, I mean, listen earlier or not, that we would target the vaccines where we need them and with the guys towards getting things open. And if we're going to go and do the people in the nursing homes first, which I think is probably a good idea, well, 2 weeks from now, I want people visiting in the nursing homes. Right? I don't want these people to use this excuse to not let a visitor in forever. And I'd like to go school by school and give it to the teachers with the idea that 2 weeks from now, this place is opening up. I mean, you can't just distribute them out there and still, you know, have everybody be being a scarily Charlie about everything else. I mean, you can't give it to half the teachers and then say, well, the other half are still so afraid we're staying home. You can't. We got to be doing this with an eye towards, you know, a solution, not just doing it. In my opinion,
I agree completely, and I would be very much in favor of saying we're opening, say, the schools on a certain date, and we're going to be rolling out the vaccine. We'll keep you posted how that happens, but in the meantime, you're back in school on this date, and unless you can make people feel like that's the way it's going to have to be, and there's some comfort level, of course, with the vaccine that made people feel less afraid of doing this. You're going to have people who are always trying to pull back and say, well, that's not the vaccine for me, and until you get a vaccine that works for X percentage of the people in my, you know, part of the labor force, I'm not interested in taking it or in going back to work. So the pushback now, they've let it sit this way for so long since March with the schools that this has become the new normal. And the pushback to get it back to where it was is going to be incredibly difficult, and I think a lot harder and longer than people expect. And it's going to be endless litigation and fighting about it. And they should just say, get back in the classroom by this date or we're replacing you.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think you should ever force somebody to do anything. I mean, I if somebody's afraid, you can't coach fear. If somebody thinks that they have a condition that if they were to catch it, that they have a problem, I would never say, no, you get in there, and by the way, don't worry about it, because maybe it's something they should be worried about. So my idea would be, to save on vaccines, I would like to give antibody tests and not give a vaccine day one to somebody who's already had it, because you're basically wasting the shot. But I would say we're giving vaccines at, you know, St. Barnabas on January 6th for all the teachers and support staff, those that need it, and we're coming back on the 17th, and we're giving you a second shot. And by the way, the place is opening on the 18th. If you don't want to show up for the vaccine or at all, don't. But we're going to go out and hire somebody else. But I'm not going to say you have to be here and go kidnap you and bring you in there. I mean, it's like anything else. There are people who don't want to go to work because the ride in is too dangerous. And you know what? They're not so wrong about that, John. There's two idiots who went by me in Hubbard's Cave this morning, 80 miles an hour. Well, you know, that's. There's a chance they could have whacked me in a Suburban, and they were smaller cars, so maybe I'd have made it out better than them, but still, wouldn't want to try. I mean, there's risk all over the place. But I think you need to do this with an eye towards opening something up, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I would be much more in favor of a date, you know, for the schools to go back, for them to start collecting fares on Metro trains again, which I don't think they've been doing, as far as I can see, for quite a while now. So there's zero revenue that Metro's taking in. But imagine how difficult it's going to be to even have a partial reset back to some kind of normal, given how abnormal we've let everything become. The first day that, you know, the schools reopen, can you imagine how many accidents there are going to be on every expressway? Because people are used to going 80 to 100 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
When there's no traffic. And all of a sudden now there actually is traffic, and you're going to see a protracted return to something that's going to be full of pain and suffering for a lot of people, too. I just think that, you know, to crawl back is maybe, you know, the only way to do it, but it's going to be fraught with pain and difficulty, and it's going to take a long time to get to 50%.
I don't see how, Jen, to me, economically, the damage is so great. You need to do this with a mind towards. I mean, I'm looking here at this. I sent this to you. U.S. restaurant weekly revenue trend, year over year change. Well, takeout's up 59%. All right, and dine-in is down 69%. So the total is minus like 55. So don't think for a nanosecond that because there's more takeout that it's covering up the rest. Now, obviously, there are some places that are uniquely designed or had a building or had a huge parking lot or something they could make a drive-through and never even dreamed they needed it, that basically, you know, fell down and hit their head on a gold brick, right? That's going to happen to anybody in an economy this size. And some other guy who had a great walk-up location, now all of a sudden, you know, is bleep out of luck. So, I mean, averages are not good, but these numbers, you know, are terrible. But I think you need to if a restaurant, for instance, says, by the way, every person in here, everybody who works in the place, was vaccinated in the last 2 weeks, we're open. So if you got vaccinated or you already had it, feel free to come on in. If you still don't want to be near the person next to you, you don't want the vaccination or whatever, stay home. But, I mean, this all has to be driven. It doesn't do any good to just put teachers in line and still have half the teachers not have a vaccine or not, and still don't open the school, John, is what I'm saying. Whatever you do has to be driven towards the economic, you know, end of it. And the end of it is we're open, I think.
Right. The thing that is, you know, bothersome in all of this, too, though, you know, we're still paying surcharges to the airlines for 9/11. For whatever hit the airlines took then, there's pretty much a 9/11 tax on every airfare these days just because of the hole that was dug almost 20 years ago. And restaurant prices have inflated dramatically for carry-out, dine-in, whatever. There's no restaurant that's open at all in any shape or form that hasn't raised their prices across the board. Will they lower their prices when things go back to some kind of normal? I don't think so.
They will have... if enough places are open where somebody does.
Well, and maybe that's always been, you know, the pushback, but I just don't know of too many, you know, times in history where you've had shutdowns pretty much of retail businesses like this, and then you watch what happens when there's any kind of reopening them. And the things that have become ingrained in the system during the shutdown, I think, linger for a long time afterwards, including the prices and the difficulties and just the scarcity. You know, there's not going to be as many restaurants, I don't think, for a long time as there were, say, a year ago.
Well, if you go out to Burr Ridge, say, because I was just there for dinner last week, it's not my normal stomping ground, but a little too highbrow for me, John, but but there's a couple places out there that have these massive tents. So their capacity is you know, probably twice what it was before. Right, so okay, my hat's off to them. You know, they lucked out. They took the parking lot, they put huge propane tanks there, and they're good to go. Right, and they, you know, they're doing whatever people tell them to do, whether it makes sense or not. You know, God only knows, but they're doing what people tell them to do. So my hat's off to them. I have to believe that the prices that have gone up, like you say, dramatically. You know, if there's 15 places that get to reopen around there now. For instance, one of my favorite places on, it used to be on 95th Street on Willow Springs Road was, tell us the name of the place, the Italian place. They closed permanently. Now, how many of these places are going to reopen again? But I, for one, you know, and I don't mind. I mean, I love to take, you know, Audrey out, and I like to meet people. But Jan, I'm over the 25-hour plate of pasta. I mean, give me a freaking break. I'm a pretty good Italian cook. I can feed 40 people for $25. I'm over the $12 omelet. When I was at the Restaurant Depot, and I love going there just because I can see the people, and you know my personality. It's very out there. It's odd, but I just guess how much I bought 12 dozen in a crate jumbo eggs. Guess how much?
$12.
$12. No. Now that's less than the price of one omelet. I mean, give me a break. Now I give some of those to the guys in the building here, the guys, the janitors in the building. I give them all the people. I don't care. Hey, you need a couple dozen eggs? Here you go. I'm not gonna charge them $2. I sit there and go, this is crazy. Why should people be paying 2 and 3 times? What's the 7-Eleven? $3.50? $4? You know, but I'm over it. I mean, we went to, this one place and, you know, I didn't even have a drink. I'm gonna say, three people had two glasses of wine. We had one appetizer, no dessert, and everybody had pasta of some, you know, pasta with shrimp in it or something, but still. It was $100 a couple.
Jeez.
That's a lot for you know, whatever, two glasses of wine and a bowl of pasta. I mean, come on. I had a good time, and it's not like I won't go again, but I'm also... I mean, come on, give me a break. It should be $60 or $70. I'm not saying it should be $5, you know, but what are we doing here? I mean, the stuff that I look at, Jan, is as I have friends in the restaurant business, years ago, In fact, I talked to Audrey's cousin, Eddie, who we went to Christmas Eve there. Eddie used to own a fine dining restaurant in Tennessee, and he's a great cook, nice guy. And now he does, well, his family was always in cars, and he has a, you know, does cars still. But he, I said, Eddie, what was your, when you had a place, what was your ratio? And he said, 3-1, 2.5, 3-1. I said, it's like 6 now. He goes, you got to be kidding me. I said, yeah, it's like 6. I mean, the steak that you get at some of these places, even if they're paying $15 a pound, you know, the steak's $75 at some of these places. I mean, at some point there needs to be some competition back in the system, John. And I have to believe that if we chop on this and get places open before they fall, you're going to end up not right away, but at least prices will start coming down. I think. If not,
well, if all of them can open pretty much at the same time and have, you know, whatever restrictions remain, if they can live with them, you will see people probably getting back into the restaurant business too. And opening up places, but it's going to have to be in a culture where it's now a free and open competitive space for you to get the diners in here and to wean them away from their habits in the past where they're used to eating at home and they're used to paying X number of dollars, you know, to have this food trucked in and containers that you throw away and add to the garbage problem and everything.
Yeah.
There's going to have to be a real change in mindset, and I hope that you know, I think people are very entrepreneurial when they're free to be entrepreneurial.
Right. Yes.
So it is possible to do that, but we need a complete brain transplant from what we've been doing up until now.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Jen. And I think every day it goes, the foundation gets worse and worse, and people's mentality. I mean, what an economy is supposed to look like? You almost forget. You know, I think we need, even if it's little pieces, we have to, and I've said it 3 times now, we've got to drive these vaccines. Well, first of all, in Illinois, they claim we got 1 million doses here and they've given out 100,000 shots. Well, that sucks. Right?
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
No. But I mean, these people, when are we, and how are we going to do this? I don't want to blow up AT&T building like this guy and blow myself up in the process. But somewhere along the line, we need an Aquavelva commercial on these bureaucrats. We need the cold slap in the face. No, what you're doing is not any good. Moving one piece of paper from one side of the desk to the other is not enough for your salary. I mean, we got to get people to do something.
Well, I would like to see right away people start taking off the masks when you go into a store en masse. Because you need people to be pushing back against what's been done to them, or otherwise you're going to have, you know, governors and mayors who are continually dragging their feet and trying to, you know, stick out from the crowd for whatever reason, just to get reelected or to get somebody else not reelected. And you've got to make people the driving force in this. And I would be all for, you know, mass civil disobedience. Take the mask off, destroy the ones you have left, don't buy anymore. And let's go ahead and see what happens. I would sign on to that in the New York section.
But, Jan, how do you go about doing that when you're... By the way, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just... How do you go about doing that when your population on both sides has allowed this to become a political deal instead of a public health deal? I mean, I intuitively, it would make sense... That if somebody has a cold next to you and they're wearing a mask and they sneeze,
cover your mouth.
That you you're probably, I'll use the term safer, intuitively. But if you look at the big numbers in California, they institute a full born mask thing. It's not like anybody else is getting. When you have something as virulent as this COVID, and it's contagious. I don't know if you noticed that now, when the numbers aren't improving in those places until you reach a certain level, and then of course they go down like you do every place. But it's not their fault. I was listening to some lady who was talking about how, even though now they're convinced that like some number of 70 or 75% of the chances are of the infections are happening at home, or big box stores or other ones, but a lot of them. They're not really in the restaurants. They're not really, because they got them closed. So,
So if they're closed and it's still happening, clearly, you know, there's another. Well, now she's saying that the real problem is people just aren't paying attention. We're at home. They're not wearing masks and socially distancing at home. Maybe that lady should go spend a day in a normal home in this country. Where the normal is not the people on TV living in a big apartment by themselves. It still is not normal. It is maybe for you or me, but I mean, my apartment's not that big, but I am there by myself, which I don't like so much, by the way. But the point being that there aren't still families here where there's 6-8 people that do eat together every night, and I don't know how you eat with a mask on. By the way, do you got to lay off the gravy if you're going to use the mask when you're eating? It'd be kind of messy. Just saying. But how do you tell people to stop spreading something at home? What manner of moron are you? I mean, what are you supposed to do?
Well, this is why I really think people have been trained in a really terrible way not to trust their own common sense about this. And until you get people trusting their common sense again, saying, I think I know my risk factors as well as or better than a governor or any mayor, and I'm going to act accordingly, and I don't want anybody to tell me I can't do that. And it doesn't take a whole lot of people to feel that way and to act that way for the whole thing to kind of just change overnight. And until people are willing to do that, if you're going to wait for the local governments to get wise about this, you're going to be waiting a long time.
All right, Jan, we're going to try and head off to Mike Hart and talk about volatility, especially with the move last night in the market. If we can't find him, be around.
I'll be around.
S&P futures up 27, NASDAQ futures up 107. Hopefully we're back with Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. We're struggling here this morning a little bit with our fine phone systems that evidently might be because of the blow up in Nashville. It was Nashville, right?
Yeah, it was.
S&P futures up 27, NASDAQ futures up 108, as President Trump signed the COVID bill yesterday. They must have announced the signing like right after the market opened, because the S&P's opened down 13, and I looked like 20 minutes later up 13. I'm going, God, my memory going that bad? But it was not. Anyway, hey, write this down, David. My card is, I'll give you the number. I probably shouldn't give it on the air. Anyway, I have his number here.
No, bad idea.
Bad idea. Even though, but Mike's a very popular guy. Who knows? He might have, it'd be better off if we won't give it on here. We get the stuff here. There we go. Dow is up 154. It was up 200. Around the rest of the world, we're kind of rallying as well, especially in Europe. DAX up 206. It's 1.5%. FTSE up 6. Call that flat. CAC around up 58. That's 1.1%. We're in Asia. Nikkei up 197.7. Shanghai's flat, up 72 cents. Hang Seng actually down 72 points. That's 0.3%. Bonds. The 10-year, 90.96, but it's 0.02 up. So we're getting towards that 1% number. The Bund is minus 0.55, so that hasn't moved. Japan 10-year, positive 0.008, so barely positive. Oil up 23 cents, 48.46. Brent up 23 cents, 51.52. Natural gas down 24 cents at 227. That's a big move. It's almost 10%. So somebody somewhere, Farmers Almanac, somebody, David, came up and said that, by the way, must be going to be a mild winter, because it was over $3 not that long ago. So what a great short, eh? We've got gold up 380, 1887. Silver up 86 cents. It's over 3%. Copper up 3 cents, 359. Why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and then we'll track down Mike.
Good morning, 7:41 on this interesting Monday morning. Earlier accidents on the north and south side have cleared up, but we do have a serious closure due to a shooting investigation at Belle Plaine Avenue between North Lockwood and Laramie Avenue. Weather today, Chicago, 30 and partly cloudy. The high today will be 33 and mostly sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 55 and clear right now. The high will be 63 and partly cloudy. In sports, the NFL, Bears beat the Jaguars 41-17 to stay alive with their playoff hopes. The Cardinals lose to the 49ers 20-12. In the NBA, the Bulls lose to the Warriors on a buzzer beater 129-128. And the Suns beat the Kings 116-100. NCAA basketball, DePaul loses to Providence 95-90. Northwestern beats Ohio State 71-70, and Illinois beats Indiana 69-60. Back to you, Chief.
It is amazing that the issues we're having with the phones are being traced now to this explosion in Nashville. So some guy decides to blow up his Winnebago with him in it, to where he's blown to smithereens. I don't know how much hate is going on in this world right now. I think there's kind of a lot of it, unfortunately. But when we get Mr. Mike Hart on, we'll talk about what's going on with what his predictions are for next year based on the VIX numbers, which he's an expert on. This morning, at the VIX, is actually up 0.13, which is surprising with the market up this much. So it's trading 21.66, so just under 22, which is still pretty darn high, especially for kind of a holiday couple of weeks. But we have not had anybody who's traded like calendar kind of stuff in the last year. It's hard to trade calendar stuff because really nothing, the idea of buying like retail stores in Labor Day and then selling them again in Thanksgiving, of course. So, Mike, we finally got you, bud. The guy who blew himself up is blowing up people's phone lines countrywide, eh?
Yeah, something's going on this morning, but yeah, it must be that, a secondary issue.
Because I heard guys, David was saying he was getting emails or text messages in the middle of the night that were sent like early in the day yesterday, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that is true. That was strange.
All right, so did you get the call from the White House that 5 minutes after 5 last night to buy the market when it was down 13?
I did not get that phone call. And what's interesting is I was really anticipating the opening this morning, and I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if the market, how the market was going to take all the news coming out this weekend. But it seems like it took it in stride, and it's doing what we've seen it do time and time again, which is digest the news and find some positive silver lining around everything. And we're up again today. We're up nearly 27 points right now as we speak. So it's starting out to be another strong day in the market. And I mean, Tom, we got to be near highs again with just looking at the S&P 500.
Well, talk me down from my conspiracy thing. I don't know if you were right on the market last night at 5 o'clock when it opens, the overnight session.
Yeah.
The initial shot was Spoozer down 13 and the Dow was down like 90. So I was still watching the end of the football game, so I come back like 10 minutes later and all of a sudden like it's up 13. I'm going, did I get Friday's number or something? Or was I? But because they announced that he was going to sign it, like they waited until the market opened and opened down and then the news came out.
Yeah, you know, I always find it interesting when you're playing around news like that. And, by 5 o'clock yesterday, we weren't sure if they were going to sign it. I believe that came out later.
Yeah.
In the evening.
It wasn't until, like, when the market was solidly up, when finally I got the headline on CNBC that he had signed a thing. So I'm convinced that if we had an SEC that had any stones, they would find... If you were to trace those first buyers, I think some of them would trace back to people we have heard about, shall we say. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It seems like what do they say in NCIS? I don't believe in circumstances or something like that. Now that you could make the statement here between what the European Union was doing and now this thing, is all the news the Fed can pump in, is all the good news now out? We still got people hacking around, maybe making the 600 hours 2,000, right?
Right. Well, you know, I think with a lot of the news stories, we aren't seeing the type of... I mean, maybe the market's a little numb to some of the news that's coming out. We're not seeing major swings around events that probably would have caused a lot more chaos in the market. It seems the markets this year especially has become somewhat numb to the type of news that is coming out. And what's actually a little more surprising to me is typically we are able to identify bad news as being negative for the market and good news being positive for the market. It's getting a lot harder to distinguish between what is good news for the market and what is bad news. I just think it's one of those years where there's been so much volatility and there's been so much uncertainty that certain news stories that you're confident are going to be positive and you're confident are going to be negative for the market tend to surprise us a little bit more lately. And, you know, going into Monday, I thought this might be, I actually was expecting what we saw at 5 o'clock where the market was down. I was expecting more of a down day today than to see it rally as much as it has already. And it kind of just falls into the status quo of what we've been seeing. Bad news is good news and good news is good news, but this market is definitely digesting things in such a way that they're finding a lot of positive out of the news that's coming out. I mean, signing the bill definitely was going to give the market support. I think if, you know, there wasn't a resolution to that, we would have seen the market down a lot more. But then again, you never know. Not in this type of market.
Well, it would have, if the government was going to shut down tonight and Trump was adamant he wasn't going to sign it,
I'm thinking we'd be down 70 spoos. Easy. I mean, if he all of a sudden stuck his heels in the ground and said, I'm just not doing it. Because I don't think...
I think you're right. I really do think you're right. But like I said, this... The news itself is being so hard to... It's really hard to make market decisions off some of the news lately.
Well, Mike, when I started in the business, and I will admit to all, I'm not at my best when good news is bad news and the other way around. I find it, you know, somewhat, even though I know what's happening, it's hard for me to go with it. I mean, it's hard for me to, I mean, right now, the whole thing is, if we think the place is going basically in the rat hole, right now it's positive because it just means the Fed's going to pour more money in, and even though the economy is probably going to go further south, the market's going to go further north. I just get this feeling that there's a limit to that, and I just keep thinking we're bucking up against the limit, and we don't seem to ever buck up against the limit. But when I first started, talk about ancient numbers, the money supply number used to come out. This is when Paul Volcker was doing his shtick. The money supply number came out every Thursday night. And that's the reason why the if you wanted to exercise in the OEX, which is a cash settled index, that you had to put your exercise notice in at 3:15. Mike, I don't know if you knew this or not, because the money supply numbers used to come out at 3:20. And they didn't want anybody waiting until those numbers to come out and then exercise afterward because they felt you had an unfair advantage. So you had to have the thing time stamped and in by 3:15, which made sense. But it was those deals where if the economy was basically in the toilet, and if the money supply grows a little bit on its own, what it means is that people are going to the bank and they're getting loans, and it's a positive thing, right? But in those days, if it was positive, it just meant that the Fed was going to clamp down even more the next week. So it was the exact same world, only it was the mirror image of it. It was the other way around. If things looked to be good, the Fed drove it down again because they kept wanting to drive the inflation down. Now it's the other way around. If we're going in a rat hole as the economy, the more people we lay off, the more money they pour in, which means the market goes up, even though the economy is probably not benefiting by that at all at this stage.
Right.
So, but I mean, I've always found that, for me personally, it should be amazingly simple to trade. You know, if you just knee-jerk reaction it. You just say, okay, if the numbers suck, Fed's going to put more money in, let's buy. I just cannot appear to do that, Mike, where I know they just did something that's going to help you and me and everybody else I care about. Oh, by the way, I think I'll go buy something. You know, but that is the drill.
Right. And what makes this even more difficult is we talk about, pairs trades. And pairs trades is simply if something's trading maybe lower than we expect, if something that's similar is trading higher than we expect, well, we sell the expensive thing, we buy the cheap thing, and if they're highly correlated with one another, then you have a pairs trade. And what the bet is, eventually things are going to come in line, and you can profit from the fact that, hey, there's generally a correlation where these things are not this far outside of if they're outside of the range, well, you play the pairs trade. But it strikes me as something similar going on here where the rubber band is being stretched and stretched and stretched. And I have a hard time buying up here. I have a very hard time buying up here when we're sitting at all-time highs, and it feels like we're artificially sitting at all-time highs. To me, and not to sound dire or making a prediction of bad things to come, I just think there's going to be a day when you see things come back in line a little bit and the reality of the market reflects maybe more accurately the reality of where this economy might be sitting right now.
Well, we've had dramatic moves up, and isn't my brother was saying something like in four of the last five quarters, the corporate earnings were less than the year before, and yet I got a question for you. I mean, not a question, but just about a. Sometimes when we toss these numbers around, it's hard to even get a feel for how big they are. I mean, I have real problems with it, Mike. So I got to believe that most people do. I mean, you have to believe that if you have trouble believing there's two suns, that everybody else believes there's two suns. Right now, they're fighting over whether we're having a $2,000 check or $600. Right? Well, the $600 just got passed and signed now into law by the president. But one of our good listeners sent in, you know, what does it really mean? I mean, if they decide to go with the $2,000 number, that it's 100 million people will qualify for a $2,000 check, which basically means $200 billion, which normally, in Mike and Chief world, that's a lot of dough. Now, in the world we're in right now, you know, that's a pimple on the ass of an elephant if you're in Washington, right? I mean, it's unfortunate. So this guy's solution, his name is Paul, is let's send everybody, let's send 100 million people a $9,000 check, which means you get $18,000 a family if you only make $75,000. And that would equal $900 billion. Now, not a lot of people would probably recommend that necessarily, but it's the exact same number that we're giving special interest groups. If we're going to give it to special interest groups, why not give it to regular people? I'm not saying we should, but that's the size of the number. I mean, airlines are going to get $15 billion in this thing. God's sake. I mean, we're going to have people, they want people to hire people back and pay them. Well, isn't that what the unemployment's supposed to be about? I mean, I'm not saying I want pilots on unemployment. I don't necessarily, but what are we doing? They should get paid as a pilot when they're not flying?
No, I just think because there's a real problem with there's a real problem with the unemployment number, and there's a real problem with how do we keep the economy sort of, how do we keep the wheels greased with business transactions still occurring, and you don't see things just kind of fall apart as you lose those buying numbers, and it starts with one piece and goes down. So, you know, flushing $200 billion into the system is going to help, but it seems like, I think you're referring to, like, the equitable distribution doesn't seem to be adding up, and it also seems like one of those typical Washington things where, you know, you start reading the fine print, and it's not so much as simple as, hey, everyone just gets this money. There's, of course, other groups that are getting a little bit more or a lot more. And the question becomes, you know, who are we bailing out here?
We're bailing out anybody who is a lobbyist, it appears. So, I mean, if we were to keep, stay on this theme real quick, if we were to take people that are make $75,000 instead of giving them $2,000, which we're not giving them, we're giving them $600, but the world want, well, some people want $2,000. If we just want higher, make it $9,000, make it $10,000, make it $20,000. Now, does that mean the guy who makes $76,000 gets nothing? So now the guy who makes $75,000 actually ends up with 93,000, and the guy with 76,000 is still 76,000? If we're talking about the airlines giving people, paying people, are we still going to pay a pilot $150,000, or are we going to pay him $50,000? I mean, if he's not flying, I mean, are we still paying him like he's spending hours in the air? Are we paying him a base? I mean, there's a lot in this detail, and I think the lobbyists do the best they can to keep their people out of the detail type of thing. I mean, do I really want to pay anybody $150,000 a year? I mean, I don't know if I am, but if I am, I don't necessarily want to. Do you?
Right. No. I mean, there's going to be inherent problems with this, and you know, the way this is set up right now seems sort of not completely thought out on the repercussions. It's just assumed that, hey, we throw enough money in, we're just going to see a temporary rise. That goes with the assumption that we're not going to have to throw another $200 billion in because things are going to get better, but we haven't seen that happen yet. So, you know, this is just another example of buying more time, and it's another typical example of money probably being spent with good intentions, but ultimately with questionable outcomes.
Well, I'm going to, we have Dash or Mike, and as usual, thank you very much. Great stuff. But I have one little pushback for you, and not necessarily a pushback, but the thing's 5,500 pages long. I'm going to say people like you and I are going to wonder how it all works out. And you know, you and I are, I think, fairly bright. We're just not, we're not in the government offices in the Congress. And it, I'm going to say every single line of the 5,500 pages is important to somebody. And that somebody got to somebody. And every little special interest stuff in there, some lobbyists got paid for. It's outstanding that they can all come together and influence stuff to that extent. I mean, and you and I get butt kissed, basically.
Right. I actually could not agree more with that, Tom. I think, you know, when you hear a blanket statement that here's the outcome of 5,500 pages, you know there's a lot more in the fine print, no question about it.
All right, we got a dash, but I don't know if I'm still hearing from you or Jeff tomorrow, but one of you guys, I hope. And SP Futures up 27, NASDAQ Futures up 119. Again, Mike, thank you very much. David, good job with ping pong balls in the air over there, bud. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.